I'm going to go ahead and call the, whatever date it is, Monday, April 1st, 2024, pre-council to order. We've got two things and then other items council might discuss. DeCarlin, I'll kick it to you.
Actually, so we're going to start off with a special presentation from Gabe Huffington talking about our Northeast Regional Park Feasibility Study.
Okay. So when the City of Columbia took over the former Boone County Fairgrounds property, we started to do some planning, and now we're kind of rolling a little bit farther. As part of the 2021 park sales tax, we put some funding in place to start on the infrastructure and construction. And so right now we're working on the master plan for the park, but we're also looking at the buildings and existing structures and what we do with those. And so the City of Columbia Parks Department has partnered with Ballard King and Associates. And so Darren Barr over the last year has been working on a feasibility study. And he's going to be here to talk a little bit about his findings and some suggestions for two buildings. One is the former Coliseum, we're calling it the Northeast Event Center, and then the SAP building, which are two just large metal buildings on the property. And so this meeting will kickstart some more discussions about the plans for the park and how we move forward down the road. This is one of those projects that's going to take a little while. So I'd just like to introduce Darren, and he will take over the presentation.
Thanks, Gabe. Can everyone hear me okay?
Just trying to judge volume. Again, my name is Darren Barr. I'm a principal with Ballard King & Associates. We are based out of Denver, Colorado. I live on Snow Leopard Drive. Both my boys, one has graduated from Hickman. The other one is a freshman at Hickman. I always joke with people, if I get to do something within a 3-hour drive time of my house, it's a local project, but it doesn't get more local than this. So this has been a great project to work on. We're very excited. We will have a, starting kind of at the end, we will have a final report off to Gabe here within the next week, but we'll go through some of our findings. In terms of study components, this is what we included, which is fairly typical for a feasibility study of this type. Obviously, we reviewed a lot of information pre-existing that you had. We did a demographic analysis. We looked at participation statistics on a wide variety of activities that can take place in those buildings. That's not to say you have to do those activities in those buildings, but it's options and at least goes ahead and helps talk about the market for some services. We talked about trends. We had a good public input process. From that, we made some facility recommendations. And then most important, or maybe not most important, we went ahead and developed an operational slash business plan for what it would take to operate those facilities if you move forward with the recommendations. In terms of service areas and demographics, we looked at the City of Columbia as our primary service area. Ballard King, we typically define a primary service area as the distance that people will travel on a daily or a weekly basis to go ahead and use facilities. We talked about a secondary service area as being Boone County, and then talking about a regional service area, depending upon what events are taking place in that facility. Could be 120-minute drive time. Sometimes, depending upon what's going to be in there, they might even bump out to 180 or 240-minute drive time. The results of the demographics is that in terms of population, there's ample population to support an indoor facility, sports-oriented facility within the community. The median age, when you go ahead and you factor out the college population, there's obviously presence of families with children. That's a key indicator for financial success of a facility like this. Not to say that you wouldn't do programs that would address the full age spectrum in a facility like this. You absolutely could. But those groups are going to be some of your primary users. It's always fun talking about money, but obviously one of our goals with this facility was how can we operate it at a cost neutral impact on the department? So how do we go ahead and generate enough revenue to offset our operating expenses? So based upon demographics, it would indicate there's a willingness and an ability to pay for services. And again, we take a look at household budget and expenditures, looks at cost of living, housing, those types of things. And again, that looking for that consistency with income, which we have. So all of the demographics I felt were very positive for this type of facility. We also looked at adult participation. And so we took a variety of different activities. The ones on the left, baseball, basketball, the majority of those, except for two, I was going to use the laser pointer, but it's going to turn this off. But except for the two that aren't highlighted in green, that MPI indicates that the rate of participation is higher than the national number. National number is 100, so anywhere from 15 to 20% higher rate of participation. We were also sensitive to the fact that the previous use of the facility that had been used for horse shows, that had been used for a variety of different things. So we went ahead and said, okay, what are some other things we could look at? So we looked at horseback riding, attending a state or a county fair, attend horse races, and again, pretty significant participation in those. But I think one of the things that's important is that this rate of participation has existed while that building has not been accessed for those purposes. So even though it hasn't been being used that way, the rate of participation is still up, which would indicate it's still being done someplace, just not in that particular location at this time. We also looked at information from the National Sporting Goods Association. We took that percentage of participation and overlaid it onto the population of the city of Columbia. So for something like pickleball, right? If I talk with Gabe and a group of his cohorts and I say pickleball in front of recreation directors, just collective groan through the room. So if you're holding that back, feel free to go ahead and do that. But we can overlay that. So we talk about, okay, it's 2.6%, or in 2023, about 3,000 people. So is that where an area where we want to make an investment? Maybe in contrast to something like, take golf, for example, we're at 6.9%. So again, this isn't saying that if you do something with gymnastics, you're going to have 2,000 people participate. We're simply saying that's the market for services of a variety of activities that could take place. Some of the trends that we're seeing, again, Ballard King, we've done work all across the state of Missouri. We do work nationally. Some trends that we're seeing both locally and nationally, there doesn't seem to be enough indoor multi-purpose space or flex space. We're going ahead and we're using rooms like this to do yoga classes. We're going ahead and we've got people doing baseball practices in gymnasiums. There just does not seem to be enough of this space, regardless of the community that we're going in. Indoor turf is becoming more and more popular, a wide variety of sizes and configurations. And you're kind of at the breakpoint. You go much further south than where we're at right now, it's not as popular. The further north you go, obviously, the more popular it gets. The city has a great amount of programming that's taking place and for a wide variety of ages. At one point when we went ahead and did the feasibility study for the ARC, there was really a focus on youth and families. Those facilities are becoming more and more multi-generational as we move forward. Youth sports exploding, adult sports is changing, where we used to do 6, 8, 12 week leagues for adult sports, we're finding those are becoming much more constrained. So people are much more willing to go ahead and participate in a 3 or 4 day tournament, but trying to get them to commit to a 6 to 8 week league, people aren't willing to commit that amount of time, but still very popular. This is a list of focus groups that we went ahead and we met with over the course of a few days. Some of them we came back to at a later time. Some key takeaways that we grabbed from these groups: the Convention and Visitors Bureau obviously thought there was an opportunity for a variety of rentals and shows with that front half of the Coliseum, and they really thought that it wouldn't require much investment at all in the current facility, that you could really do a lot of things with the way it was currently configured. The Show Me State Games did not have any grand visions in terms of how they would use the space, but they definitely wanted to be involved and envision there being competitions and those kinds of things. We were focused on and engaging the folks for pickleball. Definitely looking for inexpensive indoor opportunities, but they were very much an open book and said, look, as soon as it's nice enough for us to play outside, that's what we're going to do. So you really only have a 3 or 4 month window. In terms of turf users, there's no real large space, indoor space in Columbia. They would have significant use November through March. A couple of the groups talked about being investment partners. Had some very specific things that they might like to see and weren't necessarily going to ask the city to do all that, but might be able to come in with some dollars for capital and investment. And when you talk about all those different sports that could go ahead and use the turf areas, just in the groups that we talked with, approximately over 2,000 participants. The fair board was very happy to sit down and talk with us. Their focus was on the 2 weeks of the fair and how they might use the building during that time. So when you talk about your 52-week year, calendar year, you're talking about this facility definitely not being available for 2 weeks surrounding the fair, which made sense. Their interest was more on the front half of the facility in terms of being able to use that for their hand breakfast, I think it was, and making sure we improve with appropriate AV opportunities. The Parks and Recreation staff, it was really about programming, making sure that we could go ahead and expand our programming. We've got programs going on in less than ideal areas, so how can we do that? And then that relates back to the opportunity for programs in appropriate spaces. Roller Derby was maybe my favorite group to go ahead and visit with. I didn't get a nickname from that one, but that's probably a good thing. But I wrote down everybody else's. So there's no real space in Columbia that's appropriately sized for their events. You're really talking about 7 or 8 events over the course of a calendar year. But when you start talking about the geographic reach that they could have, could definitely have a positive economic impact upon the community. And they're not looking for a dedicated space. They're all about, hey, this is what we need, and however that integrates with what it is that you could potentially do would be great. Columbia Public Schools really told us they can't accommodate the number of requests they're getting at this point, both for indoor court space, for indoor anything space. They're also very intrigued about the idea of what indoor turf might do in terms of alleviating some of the use that they're getting year round. Columbia College, definitely were interested in terms of sports and some of the things that they don't have. They're interested in potentially a wrestling program. Both my boys wrestle, so that perked my ears up a little bit. And then also some use by existing sports, but I would view them as a potential key tenant, especially for the SAP building once that was developed. The largest group that we went ahead and visited with was the equine or horse group. There's probably over 50 different groups represented. There was probably at least 100 to 125 people that came to that meeting. There's definitely opportunity for cross promotion with other providers in the area. They sort of talked about this circuit that Springfield, Missouri, and or Springfield, Illinois, and Columbia, Missouri, and Springfield, Missouri, and Tulsa, and Oklahoma City, and kind of this circuit that could go ahead and happen. They were really surprised that the building was in as good a shape as it was and talked about the minimal investment that it would require to continue to do things there. They were also very clear about the fact that the money isn't necessarily made on the horse shows that take place and the rental of the Coliseum or the rental of the SAP building. Where the money is made in the rental of the stalls and of the other barns that are out there when people are going and housing their animals for a period of time. So there really wasn't a lot of question about the idea that Monday through Sunday we could keep that building busy with those types of activities. It was the Monday through Thursday where there would be a little bit of a lack. So again, we tried to, through this process, be as realistic and as eyes wide open and as sensitive to the groups as possible, but also with some realism added into that. So when we started talking about the building program and making recommendations, obviously this is the front half of the Coliseum. This potential to have one large space or to be divided into 4 smaller bays. The dimensions in terms of the cross courts, you could actually fit a basketball court going across in this area. So if you did want to line it for some court space, you may have some issues with ceiling height, but if you're looking for spillover or if you're looking to do a sports camp that maybe use the front of the building and the back of the building, there's some opportunities there. And again, as we heard from Convention and Visitors Bureau and walking that space, you know, minimal aesthetics need improvements needed before you could go into immediate use. So if we push forward, or if the city were to push forward with this, well, we're talking about some pretty big dollar amounts at the end to go ahead and the back half of the building and the SAP building. The building could start doing programming, could start hosting different trade shows, other things within calendar year 2024 if you really wanted to be that aggressive about it. In terms of the transition space, so between this meeting space and the back and the arena area, restrooms, offices, concessions was a big question. What do we do with that? You have the space available, so that might be one of those that you don't renovate, you leave as is, learn to figure out what you do with it in the future. Obviously, meeting rooms and the mezzanine area is another one that's kind of a fun spectator opportunity. I think I walked that a couple times to figure if you could fit 2 or 3 wrestling mats up there, but the key component being that you don't necessarily have to go ahead, and if you go into this building, depending upon what you put up there, you may not have to go ahead and equip that with an elevator for ADA accessibility. All depends upon what's taking place up there and if there's equal access on the ground floor. So that could not minimize but change the investment level. In terms of the actual Coliseum area, we're talking about the center section, which would be from I-beam on the left to I-beam on the right. Removing that cement wall and it being one large piece of turf that you could go ahead and that you could section with 2 to 3 curtains. The south half of that, the area next to the SAP building, a large amount of storage, some transition area. There might be some restrooms that are relocated there. the north side, part side that's not in the picture, talking more of batting cages, pitching tunnels, golf tunnels, and actually having some unfinished space that you could potentially renovate and include as time went on. We start talking about the SAP building. We really talked about it as one large room with a cement floor with the ability to divide into four different sections. You could literally, it's large enough, you could have four different activities going on at the same time. Excuse me, depending upon sound and all those different kinds of things. Obviously equipped with HVAC, fire suppression, LED lighting, ample storage. Some of that's going to be transitioned between the two buildings. Some of it's going to be dedicated. Definitely keeping those big overhead doors to move large equipment in and out. But the most important one is kind of connected to the adjacent space. So in theory, you could have one event that used the front of the Coliseum, the back of the Coliseum, and the SAP building all at the same time. Or you could have three individual things going on at the same time. You could have an event going on in the front half of the Coliseum, practices going on in the back, and you could have something going on in the SAP building all at the same time. So when we talked with SFS Architecture, they were pretty clear about being able to have control points and trying to minimize staffing. We went ahead and we developed an operational plan for the facility. We took a look at expenses, commodities, contractual obligations, and made a recommendation for capital improvement. That recommendation for capital improvement goes into a sinking fund, so by years 5, 6, 7, you have a balance there that you can go ahead and begin to access. The biggest drain, I guess, is for lack of a better word, that's going to hit that capital improvement allocation is going to be when you have to replace the turf or when you have to replace curtains and those types of things. When we looked at revenues, again, this is new revenue. This is not talking about taking things that the city is currently doing and shifting them out there. About $500,000 in programming, some money in vending, turf rentals, cage rentals, activity hall, SAP rental, party rental. It's important when you go ahead and you look at this and you see, oh, wow, it gets pretty close to penciling out. None of those revenues are factored at capacity. Most of them are at that 30 to 40%. So there is potential for the revenue to increase. It's also important to understand that when we built this revenue model, operational model, we did it as though it was a field house operation. Everybody's been to the Arc, or I hope everybody's been to the Arc, maybe not at 5:30 when it opens or at 9 o'clock at night when it closes, but you're talking about a 16-hour day in that building, right? This building, the operational model was the idea that the building is open when there's activities taking place. So if it's a Sunday afternoon, and somebody just wants to go and kick a soccer ball around, building's not open to do that. There's not a drop in a fee associated with that. But if there's rentals taking place, the building's open. If there's programs taking place, the building's open. If there's special events, it's open. So that's when you go ahead and you say, wow, can you really operate a building like that for $1.26 or $1.3 million? You can, because it's open when there's activities going on. We took a look at a five-year projection, just talking about what cost recovery could get to. We did the same modeling for the Sportsplex. It's in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. It's 6 basketball courts, a section of turf. They had a very similar operational model, but the longer they were open, they were getting more and more clamoring for, hey, public access, we want to do morning walking, we want to do some of those kinds of things in the building. Building is performing well enough that they were willing to go ahead and say, you know what, we're willing to do that in some of the winter months and those kinds of things. But again, it's important to note community center model, recreation center model, field house model, three completely different things. And we were in that field house model when we built this opportunity. So when we go ahead, and I mentioned it, in addition to the feasibility study, the Parks and Recreation Department worked with SFS Architecture. They're in Kansas City. They're also doing work on the field house south of town. They put together some floor plans just based upon what we had gone ahead and shared. So existing site facility, obviously the event center and the SAP building. When you go ahead and you start talking about this, this is just an overview where it talks about the SAP and it being finished, and then the Coliseum or the event center having a driveway that you can go ahead and pull up. Obviously lots of parking. Two of those barns go ahead and stay with the idea that they're going to go ahead and serve as storage for the park as a whole. Excuse me. Gives you another aerial view. You can see how the buildings have been connected together. There's lots of storage that's in between the two. There's a little bit of a grade change there, so it's not, you can't necessarily go from one building straight into the other. but definitely goes ahead and is a monster building. Interior floor plan, excuse me, obviously one large section of turf that you could do multiple infield practices at the same time. The SAP building is sort of laid out that, you know, you could have multiple fencing lanes, you could have your roller derby in the middle, you could have some wrestling mats. I think Brian with SFS did that just to appease me, which I appreciate. Lots and lots of storage. And the interesting part about storage is the building's already built. So when people start talking about building a new building, they're like, we don't want to pay for storage. But we have ample storage, and there was multiple groups, thanks, Gabe, that actually said, if you have storage cubbies there for us, if you have a 10-foot by 10-foot section that's caged in and we can lock that, we will pay a significant amount of money not to just not have to schlep our stuff back and forth. So some revenue potential associated with that. Gives you a kind of a view of the outside as it currently exists and what it could potentially look like in the future. Also goes ahead and talks about kind of the center reception area. So again, you're talking about, you could have something going on in an activity hall, you could have something going on in the turf, you could have something going on in the SAP. So you can have a main point, main reception area, but you can also go ahead and spin off into a lot of different areas. But gives you an idea of what the reception could look like, a view into the SAP building, and then this is going to be an opposite view kind of looking into the turf area. One of the things that's nice about these facilities, it's different from a pool and some other types of facilities, is just the fact that you can kind of, the HVAC can fluctuate based on the time of the year, right? In the wintertime, doesn't necessarily have to be super warm in some of those spaces if you're not doing an event, if you're just doing a practice. Same thing in the summer months, you can go ahead and you can let it warm up a little bit if you really want to. But lots of different options exist in those spaces. We worked with a group in upstate New York, and if you've ever been in upstate New York, I lived there for a few years, my condolences. Snow from Halloween to tax day is no fun. But I talked with a provider up there, and they have a small piece of indoor turf. And when I say small, it is 15 feet longer than this room. The amount of money that they make on that indoor turf area for Nerf gun birthday parties, they put some inflatable obstacles in there. And if any of you are parents, how much will you pay to not have the birthday party in your house? A lot. There's lots of opportunities that exist with a facility like this. Again, gives you another kind of aerial view, going ahead and using it, not aerial view, but action view, using it as infield practice. Again, that's something that we heard time and time again, is we just don't have those spaces. And when we asked about summer, you know, we are far enough south that, you know, we know what it's like here in July. So being able to get out of the sun at some times and being able to do some indoor stuff in July and early August was also attractive to many of the groups. One last look at the SAP building from an inside perspective. Again, it has the roller derby going. You'll also notice, you know, lots of opportunity for parking out here. They toyed with the idea of, hey, if we could bring food trucks in for the bouts that the roller derby folks have, they'd really, really like that idea. But it gives you an idea what that might look like, or if it was set up for wrestling. I know that there's a tournament that my family has gone to that could be accommodated by this, and I think we pushed 700 wrestlers through a building like that in a day, and they come from hours and hours away. So the economic impact for a facility like this, whether it's wrestling or soccer or softball or roller derby is pretty significant. So some last things, Gabe, are these your talking points or are these my talking points? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Darren will be open for questions, but we to kind of wrap this up so we can keep moving along. Our next steps on this project is we will introduce this feasibility study at some point as legislation so it can be accepted at a city council meeting. We are also currently working on the park master plan, and so as it may come with that plan, but we're going to start the public input process and start to talk to folks with the idea of these buildings and some other things that are coming forward. And then we'll return to the park for the park master plan. And then we also need to officially name the park, and we're working on that. Two funding sources that are moving forward tonight will be first read, but we do have $2.5 million. This is a Missouri State Legislature budget appropriation. We have an agreement with the Department of Agriculture for these funds. This is for new buildings for the Boone County Fair. So we are working on that right now, and so we need to have the agreement signed, and then we'll kind of come back to you all with some more information about that. And then in the park sales tax, we have pretty close to $4 million in 25 and 26 to start talking about some of the outdoor sports facility infrastructure. And so we've got some things that are happening to start to pull this whole park together. But we needed to really have a clear idea of what we're going to do with these buildings. And then this kind of sets us on this path with some sports. And then you're going to see a whole lot of other activities. Our goal is to come back and talk about this park kind of looking like a Cosmo Park with how many activities can we do. It's important in this area of Columbia. We have all kinds of outdoor activities, these indoor buildings. And so we'll kind of tie it all together and come back to you all here, hopefully within the next 6 months. We have to get moving on the Department of Agriculture money that's kind of pushing us along. And so that's kind of our next step.
Any other questions? I know Betsy has a question.
And then yeah, I have a couple questions. Thank you for the overview of starting this. One is, as you just brought up, the Missouri State Legislature budget appropriation. When you say new buildings, what are you talking about?
So currently right now, can you go back to slide 20, please?
Oh, and look at those slides are numbered.
Mayor's safe, you know, that one. So in the grand scheme of things, one thing when we took this property over from Boone County, this is a lot of flat available space for large rectangular outdoor fields. But those 4 to 5 white roofed buildings right there, the Boone County Fair has 26 acres where it says overflow parking, all that space. So our goal is to move those buildings to the other side of the street. And that's what that $2.5 million will kickstart, is to move those buildings across so that they have new spaces. That allows us then to come in and start to look at how we put a whole bunch of other park related activities on this side.
So you're going to move those buildings to the other side.
In a much different configuration with an arena, restrooms, concessions, yes. We've toured two different places with the Boone County Fair Board members and talked to them about what they need long-term for their facilities. And so that is their designated space, and so we'll use those funds to help them build those buildings.
Okay.
These buildings are, a couple of them are pretty disrepair. We've made lots of progress to just be able to have the fair there at this point in time. So a couple of them are need to come down essentially in the long run.
Okay. And then the other question had to do with sort of the heating and cooling systems for the buildings that you have. Is there a plan to make them energy efficient, solar panels, all those things that make them not CO2 producing?
Yes. So right now, the only space in these buildings that has an HVAC system is the front portion. So when you see, as a part of SFS Architecture's work was to do an evaluation of all the systems. Uh-huh. So you'll get that report when we send everything together. And their recommendation will be to put HVAC through the whole system, but then also look at all of our energy efficiency. Yeah, because that system it's old enough that the Boone County Fair Board guys can remember putting it in, like, when he was, I think Jeff said, in his 20s, and he's in his 60s now. He's been there a long time.
Okay, thanks.
Nick Foster.
Well, she asked one of my questions. When you talk about moving these buildings, then, are we talking about actually moving the building or simply taking them down and reconstructing them on the other side?
There's only one building that is a metal frame structure. The rest of them would just be taken down and disposed of, and we would build a new building.
And how does the fair use these buildings, and are they exclusive use to the fair?
Nope. So the fair are the only folks that use it now, and the three that are kind of in a vertical row there, those are all livestock barns. So they'll start, and then they have an arena, and then they have a sale office. And so we are going to incorporate all of those in the new spaces, but they are not. And so they use them 2 weeks of the year, and then the rest of the year you'll see some different programming ideas we have.
Okay.
Yep.
And Gabe, you mentioned it's going to be coming back to us, the feasibility study from Darren's firm. With that, is it going to be the feasibility study for the whole campus or just these covered three buildings?
So Darren's scope of work was the buildings.
Right.
But we will bring back the park master plan that will include all of our public input. So we're going to start that process of talking to the public. So the rest of it will be plans produced by the Parks and Recreation Department. And we'll incorporate all of these things together in a final plan for the park.
Okay. So So right now, this is kind of your update. Heads up, this is coming to us, but yes, you will bring it back to a regular council meeting.
Yes. Yeah, and the introduction of that agreement with the Missouri Department of Agriculture, a little better understanding of this money that's coming to us is to kickstart this process. And that legislation actually has plans associated, or that agreement has plans associated with it, so you can kind of see what we're thinking in terms of building. Because what the Fair Board would like to have is one, instead of having livestock barns that are separated, they want one large barn that they can segment off inside to have different animals, for instance, on a different day. Everything is covered. It's very important not to be out in the sun when you're showing animals and getting them ready for competitions. And so their plan and what they would like to have is a little bit different than what you see here. But yeah, so we took some trips to Chillicothe was the big, that's kind of the ideal scenario for them. And so we went to look at that and see what it looked like, and they were pretty happy with it.
Okay. Other questions from Betsy?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to phrase this exactly, but this looks like either money-making experience or at least a break-even experience. But how does that flow into like our youth sports or, you know, some of the other sporting activities that the city has or that the city wants to support for some of our underprivileged kids or folks that can't really afford this kind of stuff? Because this looks very much like a completely money-making thing.
Sure. A couple different ways. So when we come back to you all, you'll see all the uses that we have planned, but three out of the four users of that building also have scholarship programs, and we have a scholarship program as well. So individuals that are programmed through those leagues, for instance, Sporting Columbia, they have a scholarship program for kids to use and be a participant in their events. We also are kind of talking about the community rooms and the different spaces and how those are made available for the public. And Darren kind of hit on it, but our martial arts programs are currently in buildings that really shouldn't house martial arts. So if we have the ability to do something like this, we can move those programs where people can have scholarships to participate in. So the biggest way is through scholarship programs. And then a lot of the outdoor activities will be free activities that individuals use. So we don't have it showed like playgrounds and outdoor basketball courts and other things that will just be within the park property.
When we've done plans like this before in business plans for groups, you know, that public access, you know, we want to be able to get in there, we want to use it. It's kind of that balancing act, right, of how much that takes place. But we've had a number of our clients go ahead and do specific programming, whether it's a Friday night, family night, they have a variety of activities taking place that tries to get as many people into that building to expose them to it, just to try and make sure that it's not all sports activities, but we try and get as many different people in there as possible.
Okay. The other one we've talked about, for instance, we only have Family Fun Fest through the summer months. Utilization of this building allows us to have a Family Fun Fest during the winter months. So you can put bounce houses inside, you could have other activities, you can have a lot of different things in the front half. And so we've talked about that as well.
Don, you had a question?
I asked.
Got to answer. Rachel?
So thinking about where this is, what are plans for, I'm so thinking about public access, accessibility by public transit. What are the current options? What might be?
Yep, so we'll have a discussion about public transit, just in terms of access. The other part of this, when you see the full plan, there will be two trails that connect to this, the Hinkson Creek Trail and the Bear Creek Trail. When you see our long-term plan for all of our trail system, two of them actually connect at this park. So that was important because Highway 63 is a barrier for sure to be able to get across there. And so that's one thing that we looked at as well. But yeah, we'll discuss transit, parking, and accessibility kind of along with the plan as we go forward.
Betsy, a lot of questions.
I just have one other comment, which is that thank you for including the roller derby.
No problem.
I was waiting to hear that.
Yeah.
And I was glad that you guys have a plan.
You were a fun group. You know, I think that was one of the things that was interesting about meeting with all of the stakeholders is that none of them were overly demanding, right? That I think a lot of them understood that there's multiple interests and how do we get the biggest bang for our buck? And, you know, their biggest issue was just access, right? There's not a place that they can go currently that they can have access, consistent access to. And I think that was probably a theme, if you had to go ahead and pick one from all the stakeholder groups, was, you know, consistent access, and we've outgrown the spaces that we're in or we're in less than ideal. And, you know, even people going ahead and saying, hey, we don't have to have our practice at 6 o'clock on a weekday. We're happy to practice at 9 o'clock at night or something like that. That's what I would call a non-peak time. So, yeah, it was, they were all very good conversations.
Don, and then I have a question.
What is the overall footprint of this, the entire fairgrounds area?
The fairgrounds is about 130 acres.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. Square footage. The buildings are, the main building is about 88,000.
Yeah.
And then that's about, the SAP building is about 22,000 square feet.
So 130 acres. And awesome. Forgive me, what does that compare to Cosmo that we're going to be talking about tonight? About three times?
Yes. Cosmo is at least that, yeah. But it includes the golf course, so we always take that out.
Yeah. Okay.
But yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then my question I meant to ask earlier when you were talking about pickleball, do you also have, is the flexibility, it can also be tennis in the space too? Because we've recently heard about, like, with MU closing their indoor tennis, I've heard more requests for having more indoor tennis options, and I didn't know the flexibility with the space for that.
So the only issue with the tennis is the ceiling height. We actually were trying to accommodate the University of Missouri and their tennis team, gosh, over the last winter.
Yeah.
And our ceiling height wasn't tall enough for them to even temporarily use the building. So that's the one thing.
Okay.
If it's a competition.
No, I mean, I saw them working on the green complex.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Trying.
It looks like they're maybe trying to open it.
To bring it back online.
Okay.
They figured out how they could do that. So.
Okay.
But yeah, tennis is the tough one just from height of ceiling if you're having a competition.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Gabe or Darren? No, thank you. Look forward to this coming back to us. Do you need any direction from us? No?
Not at this
good.
Time. No.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll keep you posted.
Thank you, guys. And then, DeCarly, I think we're moving on to finance. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about revenues. And so we're going to give you a forecast of a glimpse into the future of some of the things we need to maybe need to look at to make sure that we're prepared for the challenges that could face us.
Roy, do you have this?
I'll take this. You can have it.
I'm not the only one who decided they should get the paperwork.
So we want to go over, have a high overview of revenues and what we'll look like, or what we expect to look like moving forward. We'll go through each fund. So we have about 30 slides. We'd like to tee them up first, and then maybe at the end we can have some questions and kind of go over them. So.
Sounds good.
So we'll get started here. This is just kind of a refresher of our sales and use tax breakdown. So our sales tax for the city, what we collect is 2%, and 50% goes to general fund and public improvement, broken out 98% to general fund, 2% to public improvement. 12.5% goes to capital improvements. That's that sales tax that's up for renewal. Parks and sales tax is also gets 12.5%, and then transportation gets 25% of that. And then how we kind of do our forecasting is we look at our Moody's analytics and kind of get their view of what sales tax numbers are going to look like in the future. And as you can see, this is kind of a historical graph going into the future, where we saw that huge jump right after COVID, and it stayed elevated through 22. And it came back down to about 2% growth in 23. And what we're seeing from what Moody's is showing is that 2% growth will probably fall to about 1.5 and stay to about that 1.5 to the 1.9% range going into the out years. This is just kind of a high overview of what we expect our sales and use tax to bring in. It's hovering around $70 million. We see that slightly kind of ticking upwards until about the end of 2030, where it gets to about 75.
Yeah, some of these first slides were before we got the sales tax in, and so we've updated some of these numbers since we put these in.
These slides here are a little redundant, but this is just a quick overview of the breakdown of the general fund, and, or breakdown of the sales taxes. just a quick note, that 25 number, that's actually projected for 24. But then you can see just kind of the same slight growth as what we're seeing here for sales tax. And then the same for use tax, where you're just, you're seeing that kind of just slight upward growth.
Not sure if you all remember, but we thought use tax would come in around 9% of our sales tax total. And we've been tracking a little bit higher. So we're looking at maybe around 14% for use tax total of your sales tax. Yeah. So.
All right. So now we're going to go into our kind of our projections and our forecasting. So we do have detailed, we have numbers in here, but I think what we want to stress is the trends. So don't get too caught up in the actual numbers. We try to look at the trends because these are forecasted numbers subject to change with any type of economic adjustments that could occur. So here is our revenue projections for our general fund. And these are all our major revenue categories. And some of our assumptions is like for property tax and most of our other type of revenues, we kind of put in a 1% growth, and that's based off of the city of Columbia's population growth. So we assume if the population is growing at roughly 1%, we should see about the same increase there. And then for sales tax, we talked about that growth assumptions for sales tax and then use tax. Matthew mentioned that.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. For other local taxes, that's the one that makes up several different categories. And we kind of, what we see that is a very slight increase. And that's, so what we have in there is we have some ones that are trending downwards, like cigarette, telecommunications, and cable TV. But we also got the marijuana tax coming in to kind of boost that up. So it's kind of making up for those losses. And what we're seeing there is a slight leveling out and just a slight uptick. And then you kind of have our other kind of more minor revenue sources that make up the rest of it. And what we're overall, the overall trends, as you can see on the bottom category, is our revenues are kind of slightly increasing from about 112 and 24 up to about 119. Yeah, thank you, 30. All right, so now these are kind of the slides we're going to be looking at going forward for the general fund and all the other funds. This is our cash above target forecasting. So what this does is we look at what our beginning cash we project to be, we look at what revenues we expect to see, what expenditures we expect to see, and then we derive a cash, an ending cash balance based on those changes. And then we look at expenses, and we take 20% of that expenses to get our cash above target.
And so expenditures here and most of these fund models are based off of mostly our employee expenses that we've had and how we're trending. So, and we are doing a 2.5% increase in employee expenditures on the out years. And so that is driving a lot of your expenditures. We have two lines, the additional revenue line, that is where we receive the money for the Lamont building sale in 24, so that's something that won't be carried through. And then additional expenses, which is the housing department, where we wanted to sort of put some seed money to start that department on a good foot.
That's to create a housing fund to support some of our activities for affordable housing.
Housing trust fund?
It's a setup of, it's to seed a housing fund. The one thing we have to create is a different, additional revenue
source
that supported
long term. Mm-hmm. Can you go over that again? I missed that.
One of the things we're proposing in this current upcoming budget,
yeah,
is to establish a housing fund, okay, to support our activities for affordable housing.
Okay,
one of the things we're going to have to do is we're going to have to find a permanent revenue source to,
okay,
support it. So it's going to be able to be supported by general fund long term. But we do want to see the general fund in order to start that
And that's your additional expense of 1.2 or $2 million?
Two, okay. Yes.
Thanks. All right, I'm going to go ahead and call the, whatever date it is, Monday, April 1st, 2024, pre-council to order. We've got two things and then other items council might discuss. DeCarlin, I'll kick it to you.
Actually, so we're going to start off with a special presentation from Gabe Huffington talking about our Northeast Regional Park Feasibility Study.
Okay. So when the City of Columbia took over the former Boone County Fairgrounds property, we started to do some planning, and now we're kind of rolling a little bit farther. As part of the 2021 park sales tax, we put some funding in place to start on the infrastructure and construction. And so right now we're working on the master plan for the park, but we're also looking at the buildings and existing structures and what we do with those. And so the City of Columbia Parks Department has partnered with Ballard King and Associates. And so Darren Barr over the last year has been working on a feasibility study, and he's gonna be here to talk a little bit about his findings and some suggestions for two buildings. One is the former Coliseum, we're calling it the Northeast Event Center, and then the SAP building, which are two just large metal buildings on the property. And so this meeting will kickstart some more discussions about the plans for the park and how we move forward down the road. This is one of those projects that's gonna take a little while. So I'd just like to introduce Darren, and he will take over the presentation.
Thanks, Gabe. Can everyone hear me okay?
I'm just trying to judge volume. Again, my name is Darren Barr. I'm a principal with Ballard King & Associates. We are based out of Denver, Colorado. I live on Snow Leopard Drive. Both my boys, one has graduated from Hickman. The other one is a freshman at Hickman. I always joke with people, if I get to do something within a three-hour drive time of my house, it's a local project, but it doesn't get more local than this. So this has been a great project to work on. We're very excited. We will have a, starting kind of at the end, we will have a final report off to Gabe here within the next week, but we'll go through some of our findings. In terms of study components, this is what we included, which is fairly typical for a feasibility study of this type. Obviously, we reviewed a lot of information pre-existing that you had. We did a demographic analysis. We looked at participation statistics on a wide variety of activities that can take place in those buildings. That's not to say you have to do those activities in those buildings, but it's options and at least goes ahead and helps talk about the market for some services. We talked about trends. We had a good public input process. From that, we made some facility recommendations, and then most important, or maybe not most important, we went ahead and developed an operational slash business plan for what it would take to operate those facilities if you move forward with the recommendations. In terms of service areas and demographics, we looked at the City of Columbia as our primary service area. Ballard King, we typically define a primary service area as the distance that people will travel on a daily or a weekly basis to go ahead and use facilities. We talked about a secondary service area as being Boone County, and then talking about a regional service area, depending upon what events are taking place in that facility. Could be 120-minute drive time. Sometimes, depending upon what's going to be in there, they might even bump out to 180 or 240-minute drive time. The results of the demographics is that in terms of population, there's ample population to support an indoor facility, sports-oriented facility within the community. The median age, when you go ahead and you factor out the college population, there's obviously presence of families with children. That's a key indicator for financial success of a facility like this. Not to say that you wouldn't do programs that would address the full age spectrum in a facility like this. You absolutely could. But those groups are going to be some of your primary users. It's always fun talking about money, but obviously one of our goals with this facility was how can we operate it at a cost neutral impact on the department? So how do we go ahead and generate enough revenue to offset our operating expenses? So based upon demographics, it would indicate there's a willingness and an ability to pay for services. And again, we take a look at household budget and expenditures, looks at cost of living, housing, those types of things. And again, that looking for that consistency with income, which we have. So all of the demographics I felt were very positive for this type of facility. We also looked at adult participation. And so we took a variety of different activities. The ones on the left, baseball, basketball, the majority of those, except for two, I was going to use the laser pointer, but it's going to turn this off. But except for the two that aren't highlighted in green, that MPI indicates that the rate of participation is higher than the national number. National number is 100, so anywhere from 15 to 20% higher rate of participation. We were also sensitive to the fact that the previous use of the facility that had been used for horse shows, that had been used for a variety of different things. So we went ahead and said, okay, what are some other things we could look at? So we looked at horseback riding, attending a state or a county fair, attend horse races, and again, pretty significant participation in those. But I think one of the things that's important is that this rate of participation has existed while that building has not been accessed for those purposes. So even though it hasn't been being used that way, the rate of participation is still up, which would indicate it's still being done someplace, just not in that particular location at this time. We also looked at information from the National Sporting Goods Association. We took that percentage of participation and overlaid it onto the population of the city of Columbia. So for something like pickleball, right? If I talk with Gabe and a group of his cohorts and I say pickleball in front of recreation directors, there's a collective groan through the room. So if you're holding that back, feel free to go ahead and do that. But we can overlay that. So we talk about, okay, it's 2.6%, or in 2023, about 3,000 people. So is that where an area where we want to make an investment? Maybe in contrast to something like, take golf, for example, we're at 6.9%. So again, this isn't saying that if you do something with gymnastics, you're going to have 2,000 people participate. We're simply saying that's the market for services of a variety of activities that could take place. Some of the trends that we're seeing, again, Ballard King, we've done work all across the state of Missouri. We do work nationally. Some trends that we're seeing both locally and nationally, there doesn't seem to be enough indoor multi-purpose space or flex space. We're going ahead and we're using rooms like this to do yoga classes. We're going ahead and we've got people doing baseball practices in gymnasiums. There just does not seem to be enough of this space, regardless of the community that we're going in. Indoor turf is becoming more and more popular, a wide variety of sizes and configurations. And you're kind of at the break point. You go much further south than where we're at right now, it's not as popular. The further north you go, obviously the more popular it gets. The city has a great amount of programming that's taking place and for a wide variety of ages. At one point when we went ahead and did the feasibility study for the ARC, there was really a focus on youth and families. Those facilities are becoming more and more multi-generational as we move forward. Youth sports exploding, adult sports is changing. Where we used to do 6, 8, 12 week leagues for adult sports, we're finding those are becoming much more constrained. So people are much more willing to go ahead and participate in a 3 or 4 day tournament, but trying to get them to commit to a 6 to an 8 week league, people aren't willing to commit that amount of time, but still very popular. This is a list of focus groups that we went ahead and we met with over the course of a few days. Some of them we came back to at a later time. Some key takeaways that we grabbed from these groups: the Convention and Visitors Bureau obviously thought there was an opportunity for a variety of rentals and shows with that front half of the Coliseum, and they really thought that it wouldn't require much investment at all in the current facility, that you could really do a lot of things with the way it was currently configured. The Show Me State Games did not have any grand visions in terms of how they would use the space, but they definitely wanted to be involved and envision there being competitions and those kinds of things. We were focused on and engaging the folks for pickleball. Definitely looking for inexpensive indoor opportunities, but they're very much an open book and said, look, as soon as it's nice enough for us to play outside, that's what we're gonna do. So you really only have a 3 or 4 month window. In terms of turf users, there's no real large space, indoor space in Columbia. They would have significant use November through March. A couple of the groups talked about being investment partners. It had some very specific things that they might like to see and weren't necessarily going to ask the city to do all that, but might be able to come in with some dollars for capital and investment. And when you talk about all those different sports that could go ahead and use the turf areas, just in the groups that we talked with, approximately over 2,000 participants. The fair board was very happy to sit down and talk with us. Their focus was on the 2 weeks of the fair and how they might use the building during that time. So when you talk about your 52-week year, calendar year, you're talking about this facility definitely not being available for 2 weeks surrounding the fair, which made sense. Their interest was more on the front half of the facility in terms of being able to use that for their hand breakfast, I think it was, and making sure we improve with appropriate AV opportunities. The Parks and Recreation staff, it was really about programming. making sure that we could go ahead and expand our programming. We've got programs going on in less than ideal areas, so how can we do that? And then that relates back to the opportunity for programs in appropriate spaces. Roller Derby was maybe my favorite group to go ahead and visit with. I didn't get a nickname from that one, but that's probably a good thing. But I wrote down everybody else's. So there's no real space in Columbia that's appropriately sized for their events. You're really talking about 7 or 8 events over the course of a calendar year. But when you start talking about the geographic reach that they could have, could definitely have a positive economic impact upon the community. And they're not looking for a dedicated space. They're all about, hey, this is what we need, and however that integrates with what it is that you could potentially do would be great. Columbia Public Schools really told us they can't accommodate the number of requests they're getting at this point, both for indoor court space, for indoor anything space. They're also very intrigued about the idea of what indoor church might do in terms of alleviating some of the use that they're getting year round. Columbia College, definitely we're interested in terms of sports and some of the things that they don't have. They're interested in potentially a wrestling program. Both my boys wrestle, so that perked my ears up a little bit. And then also some use by existing sports, but I would view them as a potential key tenant, especially for the SAP building once that was developed. The largest group that we went ahead and visited with was the equine or horse group. There's probably over 50 different groups represented. There was probably at least 100 to 125 people that came to that meeting. There's definitely opportunity for cross promotion with other providers in the area. They sort of talked about this circuit that Springfield, Missouri, and or Springfield, Illinois, and Columbia, Missouri, and Springfield, Missouri, and Tulsa, and Oklahoma City, and kind of this circuit that could go ahead and happen. They were really surprised that the building was in as good a shape as it was and talked about the minimal investment that it would require to continue to do things there. They were also very clear about the fact that the money isn't necessarily made on the horse shows that take place and the rental of the Coliseum or the rental of the SAP building. Where the money is made in the rental of the stalls and of the other barns that are out there when people are going and housing their animals for a period of time. So there really wasn't a lot of question about the idea that Monday through Sunday we could keep that building busy with those types of activities. It was the Monday through Thursday where there would be a little bit of a lack. So again, we tried to, through this process, be as realistic and as eyes wide open and as sensitive to the groups as possible, but also with some realism added into that. So when we started talking about the building program and making recommendations, obviously this is the front half of the Coliseum. This potential to have one large space or to be divided into 4 smaller bays. The dimensions in terms of the cross courts, you could actually fit a basketball court going across in this area. So if you did want to line it for some court space, you may have some issues with ceiling height, but if you're looking for spillover or if you're looking to do a sports camp that maybe use the front of the building and the back of the building, there's some opportunities there. And again, as we heard from Convention and Visitors Bureau and walking that space, you know, minimal aesthetics need improvements needed before you could go into immediate use. So if we push forward, or if the city were to push forward with this, well, we're talking about some pretty big dollar amounts at the end to go ahead and the back half of the building and the SAP building. The building could start doing programming, could start hosting different trade shows, other things within calendar year 2024 if you really wanted to be that aggressive about it. In terms of the transition space, so between this meeting space and the back of the arena area, restrooms, offices, concessions was a big question. What do we do with that? You have the space available, so that might be one of those that you don't renovate, you leave as is, learn to figure out what you do with it in the future. Obviously, meeting rooms and the mezzanine area is another one that's kind of a fun spectator opportunity. I think I walked that a couple times to figure if you could fit 2 or 3 wrestling mats up there, but the key component being that you don't necessarily have to go ahead, and if you go into this building, depending upon what you put up there, you may not have to go ahead and equip that with an elevator for ADA accessibility. It all depends upon what's taking place up there and if there's equal access on the ground floor. So that could not minimize but change the investment level. In terms of the actual Coliseum area, we're talking about the center section, which would be from I-beam on the left to I-beam on the right. Removing that cement wall and it being one large piece of turf that you could go ahead and that you could section with 2 to 3 curtains. The south half of that, the area next to the SAP building, a large amount of storage, some transition area. There might be some restrooms that are relocated there. The north side, part side that's not in the picture, talking more of batting cages, pitching tunnels, golf tunnels, and actually having some unfinished space that you could potentially renovate and include as time went on. We started talking about the SAP building. We really talked about it as one large room with a cement floor with the ability to divide into four different sections. You could literally, it's large enough, you could have four different activities going on at the same time. Excuse me, depending upon sound and all those different kinds of things. Obviously equipped with HVAC, fire suppression, LED lighting, ample storage. Some of that's going to be transitioned between the two buildings. Some of it's going to be dedicated. Definitely keeping those big overhead doors to move large equipment in and out. But the most important one is kind of connected to the adjacent space. So in theory, you could have one event that used the front of the Coliseum, the back of the Coliseum, and the SAP building all at the same time, or you could have three individual things going on at the same time. You could have an event going on in the front half of the Coliseum, practices going on in the back, and you could have something going on in the SAP building all at the same time. So when we talked with SFS Architecture, they were pretty clear about being able to have control points and trying to minimize staff. We went ahead and we developed an operational plan for the facility. We took a look at expenses, commodities, contractual obligations, and made a recommendation for capital improvement. That recommendation for capital improvement goes into a sinking fund, so by years 5, 6, 7, you have a balance there that you can go ahead and begin to access. The biggest drain, I guess, is for lack of a better word, with that's going to hit that capital improvement allocation is going to be when you have to replace the turf or when you have to replace curtains and those types of things. When we looked at revenues, again, this is new revenue. This is not talking about taking things that the city is currently doing and shifting them out there. About $500,000 in programming, some money in vending, turf rentals, cage rentals, activity hall, SAP rental, party rental. It's important when you go ahead and you look at this and you see, oh, wow, it gets pretty close to penciling out. None of those revenues are factored at capacity. Most of them are at that 30 to 40%. So there is potential for the revenue to increase. It's also important to understand that when we built this revenue model, or operational model, we did it as though it was a field house operation. Everybody's been to the Arc, or I hope everybody's been to the Arc, maybe not at 5:30 when it opens or at 9 o'clock at night when it closes, but you're talking about a 16-hour day in that building. Right? This building, we really, then the operational model was the idea that the building is open when there's activities taking place. So if it's a Sunday afternoon and somebody just wants to go and kick a soccer ball around, building's not open to do that. There's not a drop in a fee associated with that. But if there's rentals taking place, the building's open. If there's programs taking place, the building's open. If there's special events, it's open. So that's when you go ahead and you say, wow, can you really operate a building like that for $1.26 or $1.3 million? You can, because it's open when there's activities going on. We took a look at a five-year projection, just talking about what cost recovery could get to. We did the same modeling for the Sportsplex that's in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. It's 6 basketball courts, a section of turf. They had a very similar operational model, but the longer they were open, they were getting more and more clamoring for, hey, public access, we want to do morning walking, we want to do some of those kinds of things in the building. Building was performing well enough that they were willing to go ahead and say, you know what, we're willing to do that in some of the winter months and those kinds of things. But again, it's important to note, community center model, recreation center model, field house model, 3 completely different things, and we were in that field house model when we built this opportunity. So when we go ahead, and I mentioned it, in addition to the feasibility study, the Parks and Recreation Department worked with SFS Architecture. They're in Kansas City. They're also doing work on the field house south of town. They put together some floor plans just based upon what we had gone ahead and shared. So existing site facility, obviously the event center and the SAP building. When you go ahead and you start talking about this, this is just an overview where it talks about the SAP and it being finished, and then the Coliseum or the event center having a driveway that you can go ahead and pull up. Obviously, lots of parking. 2 of those barns go ahead and stay with the idea that they're going to go ahead and serve as storage for the park as a whole. Excuse me. Gives you another aerial view, can see how the buildings have been connected together. There's lots of storage that's in between the two. There's a little bit of a grade change there, so it's not, you can't necessarily go from one building straight into the other, but definitely goes ahead and is a monster building. Interior floor plan, excuse me, obviously one large section of turf that you could do multiple infield practices at the same time. The SAP building is sort of laid out that, you know, you could have multiple fencing lanes, you could have your roller derby in the middle, you could have some wrestling mats. I think Brian with SFS did that just to appease me, which I appreciate. Lots and lots of storage. And the interesting part about storage is the building's already built. So when people start talking about building a new building, they're like, oh, we don't want to pay for storage. But we have ample storage, and there was multiple groups, thanks, Gabe, that actually said, if you have storage cubbies there for us, if you have a 10-foot by 10-foot section that's caged in and we can lock that, we will pay a significant amount of money not to just not have to schlep our stuff back and forth. So some revenue potential associated with that. Gives you a kind of a view of the outside as it currently exists and what it could potentially look like in the future. Also goes ahead and talks about kind of the center reception area. So again, you're talking about, you could have something going on in an activity hall. You could have something going on in the turf. You could have something going on in the SAP. So you can have a main point, main reception area, but you can also go ahead and spin off into a lot of different areas. But it gives you an idea of what the reception could look like, a view into the SAP building. And then this is going to be an opposite view, kind of looking into the turf area. One of the things that's nice about these facilities, it's different from a pool and some other types of facilities, is just the fact that you can kind of, the HVAC can fluctuate based on the time of the year, right? In the wintertime, doesn't necessarily have to be super warm in some of those spaces if you're not doing an event, if you're just doing a practice. Same thing in the summer months, you can go ahead and you can let it warm up a little bit if you really want to. But lots of different options exist in those spaces. We worked with a group in upstate New York, and if you've ever been in upstate New York, I lived there for a few years, my condolences. Snow from Halloween to tax day is no fun. But I talked with a provider up there, and they have a small piece of indoor turf. And when I say small, it is 15 feet longer than this room. The amount of money that they make on that indoor turf area for Nerf gun birthday parties, they put some inflatable obstacles in there. And if any of you are parents, how much will you pay to not have the birthday party in your house? A lot. There's lots of opportunities that exist with a facility like this. Again, gives you another kind of aerial view, going ahead and using it, not aerial view, but action view, using it as infield practice. Again, that's something that we heard time and time again, is we just don't have those spaces. And when we asked about summer, you know, we are far enough south that, you know, we know what it's like here in July. So being able to get out of the sun at some times and being able to do some indoor stuff in July and early August was also attractive to many of the groups. One last look at the SAP building from an inside perspective. Again, it has the roller derby going. You'll also notice, you know, lots of opportunity for parking out here. They toyed with the idea of, hey, if we could bring food trucks in for the bouts that the roller derby folks have, they'd really, really like that idea. But it gives you an idea what that might look like, or if it was set up for wrestling. I know that there's a tournament that my family has gone to that could be accommodated by this, and I think we pushed 700 wrestlers through a building like that in a day, and they come from hours and hours away. So the economic impact for a facility like this, whether it's wrestling or soccer or softball or roller derby is pretty significant. So some last things, Gabe, are these your talking points or are these my talking points? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Darren will be open for questions, but to kind of wrap this up so we can keep moving along, our next steps on this project is we will introduce this feasibility study at some point as legislation so it can be accepted at a city council meeting. We are also currently working on the park master plan, and so as and it may come with that plan, but we're going to start the public input process and start to talk to folks with the idea of these buildings and some other things that are coming forward. And then we'll return to the park for the park master plan. And then we also need to officially name the park, and we're working on that. Two funding sources that are moving forward tonight will be first read, but We do have $2.5 million. This is a Missouri State Legislature budget appropriation. We have an agreement with the Department of Agriculture for these funds. This is for new buildings for the Boone County Fair. So we are working on that right now. And so we need to have the agreement signed, and then we'll kind of come back to you all with some more information about that. And then in the park sales tax, we have pretty close to $4 million in 25 and 26 to start talking about some of the outdoor sports facility infrastructure. And so we've got some things that are happening to start to pull this whole park together. But we needed to really have a clear idea of what we're going to do with these buildings. And then this kind of sets us on this path with some sports. And then you're going to see a whole lot of other activities. Our goal is to come back and talk about this park kind of looking like a Cosmo Park with how many activities can we do. It's important in this area of Columbia. We have all kinds of outdoor activities, these indoor buildings. And so we'll kind of tie it all together and come back to you all here, hopefully within the next 6 months. We have to get moving on the Department of Agriculture money. That's kind of pushing us along. And so that's kind of our next step.
Any other questions? I know Betsy has a question.
And then yeah, I have a couple questions. Thank you for the overview of starting this. One is, as you just brought up, the Missouri State Legislature budget appropriation. When you say new buildings, what are you talking about?
So currently right now, can you go back to slide 20, please?
Oh, look at those slides are numbered.
Mayor State, we don't have one. So in the grand scheme of things, one thing when we took this property over from Boone County, this is a lot of flat available space for large rectangular outdoor fields. But those 4 to 5 white roofed buildings right there, the Boone County Fair has 26 acres where it says overflow parking, all that space. So our goal is to move those buildings to the other side of the street. And that's what that $2.5 million will kickstart, is to move those buildings across so that they have new spaces. That allows us then to come in and start to look at how we put a whole bunch of other park related activities on this side.
So you're going to move those buildings to the other side
in a much different configuration with an arena, restrooms, concessions. Yes. We've toured 2 different places with the Boone County Fair Board members and talked to them about what they need long term for their facilities. And so that is their designated space. And so we'll use those funds to help them build those buildings.
Okay.
These buildings are, a couple of them are in pretty disrepair. We've made lots of progress to just be able to have the fair there at this point in time. So a couple of them are need to come down essentially in the long run.
Okay. And then the other question had to do with sort of the heating and cooling systems for the buildings that you have. Is there a plan to make them energy efficient, solar panels, all those things that make them not CO2 producing?
Yes. So right now, the only space in these buildings that has an HVAC system is the front portion. So when you see, as a part of SFS Architecture's work, was to do an evaluation of all the systems. Uh-huh. So you'll get that report when we send everything together, and their recommendation will be to put HVAC through the whole system, but then also look at all of our energy efficiency. Yeah, because that system it's old enough that the Boone County Fair Board guys can remember putting it in, like, when he was, I think Jeff said, in his 20s, and he's in his 60s now. It's been there a long time.
Okay, thanks.
Nick Foster.
Well, she asked one of my questions. When you talk about moving these buildings, then are we talking about actually moving the building or simply taking them down and reconstructing them on the other side?
There's only one building that is a metal frame structure. The rest of them would just be taken down and disposed of, and we would build a new building.
And how does the fair use these buildings, and are they exclusive use to the fair?
Nope. So the fair are the only folks that use it now, and the 3 that are kind of in a vertical row there, those are all livestock barns. So they'll start, and then they have an arena, and then they have a sale office. And so we are going to incorporate all of those in the new spaces, but they are not. And so they use them 2 weeks of the year, and then the rest of the year you'll see some different programming ideas we have.
Okay.
Yep.
And Gabe, you mentioned it's going to be coming back to us, the feasibility study from Darren's firm. With that, is it going to be the feasibility study for the whole campus or just these covered 3 buildings?
So Darren's scope of work was the buildings.
Right.
But we will bring back the park master plan that will include all of our public input. So we're going to start that process of talking to the public. So the rest of it will be plans produced by the Parks and Recreation Department, and we'll incorporate all of these things together in a final plan for the park.
So right now, this is kind of your update. Heads up, this is coming to us, but yes, you will bring it back to a regular council meeting.
Yes. Yeah, and the introduction of that agreement with the Missouri Department of Agriculture, a little better understanding of this money that's coming to us, is to kickstart this process. And that legislation actually has plans associated, or that agreement has plans associated with it, so you can kind of see what we're thinking in terms of building. Because what the Fair Board would like to have is one, instead of having livestock barns that are separated, they want one large barn that they can segment off inside to have different animals, for instance, on a different day. Everything is covered. It's very important not to be out in the sun when you're showing animals and getting them ready for competitions. And so their plan and what they would like to have is a little bit different than what you see here. But yeah, so we took some trips to Chillicothe was the big, that's kind of the ideal scenario for them. And so we went to look at that and see what it looked like, and they were pretty happy with it.
Okay. Other questions from Betsy?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to phrase this exactly, but this looks like either money-making experience or at least a break-even experience. But how does that flow into like our youth sports or, you know, some of the other sporting activities that the city has or that the city wants to support for some of our underprivileged kids or folks that can't really afford this kind of stuff? Because this looks very much like a money-making, completely money-making thing.
Sure. A couple different ways. So when we come back to you all, you'll see all the uses that we have planned, but three out of the four users of that building also have scholarship programs, and we have a scholarship program as well. So individuals that are programmed through those leagues, for instance, Sporting Columbia, they have a scholarship program for kids to use and be a participant in their events. We also are kind of talking about the community rooms and the different spaces and how those are made available for the public. And Darren kind of hit on it, but our martial arts programs are currently in buildings that really shouldn't house martial arts. So if we have the ability to do something like this, we can move those programs where people can have scholarships to participate in. So the biggest way is through scholarship programs. And then a lot of the outdoor activities will be free activities that individuals use. So we haven't showed like playgrounds and outdoor basketball courts and other things that will just be within the park property.
When we've done plans like this before and in business plans for groups, you know, that public access, you know, we want to be able to get in there, we want to use it, is kind of that balancing act, right, of how much that takes place. But we've had a number of our clients go ahead and do specific programmings, whether it's a Friday night, family night, they have a variety of activities taking place that tries to get as many people into that building to expose them to it, just to try and make sure that it's not all sports activities, but we try and get as many different people in there as possible.
The other one we've talked about, for instance, we only have Family Fun Fest through the summer months. Utilization of this building allows us to have a Family Fun Fest during the winter months. So you can put bounce houses inside, you could have other activities, you can have a lot of different things in the front half. And so we've talked about that as well.
Don, you had a question?
Pass.
Got it answered. Rachel.
So think about where this is, what are plans for, I'm so thinking about public access, accessibility by public transit. What are the current options? What might be?
Yep, so we'll have a discussion about public transit, just in terms of access. The other part of this, when you see the full plan, there will be two trails that connect to this, the Hinkson Creek Trail and the Bear Creek Trail. When you see our long-term plan for all of our trail system, two of them actually connect at this park. So that was important because Highway 63 is a barrier for sure to be able to get across there. And so that's one thing that we looked at as well. But yeah, we'll discuss transit, parking, and accessibility kind of along with the plan as we go forward.
Betsy, a lot of questions.
I know. I just have one other comment, which is to thank you for including the roller derby.
No problem.
I was waiting to hear that.
Yeah.
And I was glad that you guys have a plan.
You were a fun group. You know, I think that was one of the things that was interesting about meeting with all of the stakeholders is that none of them were overly demanding, right? That I think a lot of them understood that there's multiple interests in how do we get the biggest bang for our buck. And, you know, their biggest issue was just access, right? There's not a place that they can go currently
that, had, that they could have access, consistent access to. And I think that was probably a theme, if you had to go ahead and pick one from all the stakeholder groups, was, you know, consistent access. And we've outgrown the spaces that we're in, or we're in less than ideal. And, you know, even people going ahead and saying, hey, we don't have to have our practice at 6 o'clock on a weekday. We're happy to practice at 9 o'clock at night or something. Like, that's what I would call a non-peak time. So, yeah, it was, they were all very good conversations.
Don, and then I have a question.
What is the overall footprint of this, the entire fairgrounds area?
The fairgrounds about 130 acres.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. Square footage. The buildings are, the main building's about 88,000.
Yeah.
And then that's about, the SAP building is about 22,000 square feet.
So 130 acres. And forgive me, what does that compare to Cosmo that we're going to be talking about tonight? About three times?
Yes, Cosmo is at least that, yeah. But it includes the golf course, so we always take that out and use it as a place. But yes. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
And then my question I meant to ask earlier when you were talking about pickleball, do you also have, is the flexibility, it can also be tennis in the space too? Because we've recently heard about, like, with MU closing their indoor tennis, I've heard more requests for having more indoor tennis options, and I didn't know the flexibility with the space for that.
So the only issue with the tennis is the ceiling height. We actually were trying to accommodate the University of Missouri and their tennis team, gosh, over the last winter.
Yeah.
And our ceiling height wasn't tall enough for them to even temporarily use the building. So that's the one thing.
Okay.
If it's a competition.
No, I mean, I saw them working on the green complex. Yeah, I don't know. Trying. It looks like they're maybe trying to open it.
To bring it back online.
Okay.
They figured out how they could do that. So.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, tennis is the tough one just from height of ceiling. If you're having a competition.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Gabe or Darren? No, thank you. Look forward to this coming back to us. Do you need any direction from us? No?
Not at this time. Nope.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll keep you posted.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And then, DeCarly, I think we're moving on to finance. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about revenues. And so we're going to give you a forecast of a glimpse into the future of some of the things we need to maybe need to look at to make sure that we're prepared for the challenges that could face us.
Roy, do you have
this? Sorry. Okay. I'll take this. You can have it.
So we want to go over, have a high overview of revenues and what we'll look like, or what we expect to look like moving forward. We'll go through each fund. So we have about 30 slides. We'd like to tee them up first, and then maybe at the end we can have some questions and kind of go over them. So
sounds good.
So we'll get started here. This is just kind of a refresher of our sales and use tax breakdown. So our sales tax for the city, what we collect, is 2%. And 50% goes to general fund and public improvement, broken out 98% to general fund, 2% to public improvement. 12.5% goes to capital improvements. That's that sales tax that's up for renewal. Parks and sales tax is also gets 12.5%, and then transportation gets 25% of that. And then how we kind of do our forecasting is we look at our Moody's analytics and kind of get their view of what sales tax numbers are going to look like in the future. And as you can see, this is kind of a historical graph going into the future, where we saw that huge jump right after COVID, and it stayed elevated through 22, and it came back down to about a 2% growth in 23. And what we're seeing from what Moody's is showing is that 2% growth will probably fall to about 1.5 and stay to about that 1.5 to the 1.9% range going into the out years. This is just kind of just a high overview of what we expect our sales and use tax to bring in. It's hovering around $70 million. And we see that slightly kind of ticking upwards until about the end of 2030, where it gets to about $75 million.
Yeah, some of these first slides, were before we got the sales tax in, and so we've updated some of these numbers since we put these in.
These slides here are a little redundant, but this is just a quick overview of the breakdown of the general fund and or breakdown of the sales taxes. And just a quick note, that 25 number, that's actually projected for 24. But then you can see just kind of the same slight growth as what we're seeing here for sales tax. And then the same for use tax, where you're seeing that kind of just slight upward growth.
Not sure if you all remember, but we thought use tax would come in around 9% of our sales tax total. And we've been tracking a little bit higher. So we're looking at maybe around 14% for use tax total of your sales tax. Yeah. So.
All right. So now we're going to go into our kind of our projections and our forecasting. So we do have detailed, we have numbers in here, but I think what we want to stress is the trends. So don't get too caught up in the actual numbers. We'll try to look at the trends because these are forecasted numbers subject to change with any type of economic adjustments that could occur. So here is our revenue projections for our general fund. And these are all our major revenue categories. And some of our assumptions is like for property tax and most of our other type of revenues, we kind of put in a 1% growth. And that's based off of the city of Columbia's population growth. So we assume if the population is growing at roughly 1%, we should see about the same increase there. And then for sales tax, we talked about that growth assumptions for sales tax and then use tax. Matthew mentioned that.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. For other local taxes, that's the one that makes up several different categories. And we kind of, what we see that is a very slight increase. And that's, so what we have in there is we have some ones that are trending downwards, like cigarette, telecommunications, and cable TV. But we also got the marijuana tax coming in to kind of boost that up. So it's kind of making up for those losses. And what we're seeing there is a slight leveling out and just a slight uptick. And then you kind of have our other kind of more minor revenue sources that make up the rest of it. And what we're overall, the overall trends, as you can see on the bottom category, is our revenues are kind of slightly increasing from about 112 in 24 up to about 119. All right, so now these are the kind of the slides we're going to be looking at going forward for the general fund and all the other funds. This is our cash above target forecasting. So what this does is we look at what our beginning cash we project to be. We look at what revenues we expect to see, what expenditures we expect to see, and then we derive an ending cash balance based on those changes. And then we look at expenses, and we take 20% of that expenses to get our cash above target.
And so expenditures here and most of these fund models are based off of mostly our employee expenses that we've had and how we're trending. So, and we are doing a 2.5% increase in employee expenditures on the out years. And so that is driving a lot of your expenditures. We have two lines, the additional revenue line, that is where we receive the money for the Lamont building sale in 24. So that's something that won't be carried through. And then additional expenses, which is the housing department, where we wanted to sort of put some seed money to start that department on a good foot.
That's to create a housing fund.
Housing trust fund?
It's a seeded housing fund. The one thing we have to create is an additional revenue source to support it long term.
Mm-hmm. Can you go over that again? I missed that.
So one of the things we're proposing in this current upcoming budget yeah. is to establish a housing fund okay. to support our activities for affordable housing.
Okay, one and that
these, one of the things we're going to have to do is we're going to have to find a permanent revenue source to okay. support it. So it's going to be able to be supported by general fund long term, but we do want to seed it with the general fund in order to start that start the fund off.
And that's your additional expense of 1.2 or two million.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
So kind of what we get to is this general trend of expenses slowly starting to outpace revenues. And that's largely due to, keeping up with salaries and wages. Salaries and wages makes up 72% of all those expenditures you see there. And in order to kind of stay on top of the market for salaries and wages, we need to keep increasing that, which is obviously taking a drain on our cash flows. And what we're projecting right now is by 2030, we start to go into the yellow level, which is where we still have positive cash, but we're below our cash target. And then for this next slide, this is another scenario we just wanted to show you.
So we've been asked a few times about what it would look like if we put $1 million away for police and fire pension. And this is basically what it would look like if you did that. So it speeds up the time where you go below your cash reserve target. So it moves that time up to about 2029. So and that's not even the full 10 years or whatever that was projected. That's only 6 years projected out right now.
And you want us to save questions on that until after you've gone through the special revenue?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So now we're going to jump over to the special revenue funds. So this is funds that have a dedicated tax source that funds most all or a portion of their expenditures. So we'll start with capital improvement sales tax. We put this in there for just so we're covering all of them, but this is probably the most incomplete of all of our forecasts due to the fact that there's going to be some upcoming, sessions where there's going to be discussed what projects
we'll
be looking into. So.
So on the 30th, when we'll start talking about some of those projects that we will be getting into, we can sort of fill this out better. Right now, we can only say expenditures are increasing by this amount. And so, but we'll have a better look at what that looks like once we pick those projects.
So we'll go to the Parks and Rec fund now. So this is a little more of a complex fund. They have dedicated Parks and Rec sales tax, but 50% of that has to go to capital projects only. Obviously, the other 50% goes to operating. And in addition to that, the rec service side of the Parks and Rec has fees and service charges that are incorporated in this. The other thing that to keep in mind is that another major revenue source for them is a general fund funding. Right now, there's about a $5 million annual transfer from the general fund to Parks and Rec. And one of the things that we're going to keep doing is if we fall below the cash target, there would probably be a need for the general fund to supplement that additional income to keep them above their target. But as you can see here, in 26, they start to kind of run into cash below target levels, and that kind of continues in out years.
Can I just ask, where does that $5 million from general fund show up here?
It shows, and this is just in the total revenue line.
Total revenue, okay.
And then it's a transfer out in the general fund.
It's a really expense there. So this is transportation sales tax. So this sales tax is dedicated specifically for roads and sidewalk maintenance, airport and transit. This fund is continuing to see pretty strong growth, and it's pretty much on an upward trajectory as of now.
Why is that?
A lot of that has to do with the fact that during COVID, we were able to save some money by not needing to fund transit and airport due to them getting grant money from CARES and ARPA. And that kind of helped us build up a pretty big cash. So public improvement, this gets a small percentage of the general fund tax, and then it also gets basically additional revenue from basically fees that we charge for developmental fees. This one here, there was in the history, there's been a lot of high transfers out, so it's kind of running borderline right now. But if we kind of keep our transfers, which is the only thing in that expenditure line is the transfers, if we kind of keep that steady for a couple years, we can probably build back that up and be fine going forward. You mentioned in tourism, their main source of revenue is the hotel tax. This fund's looking pretty strong. Their cash levels are staying pretty steady. So now we're going to go to the enterprise funds, just a kind of reminder of what those are. Those are funds that are largely supported by fees and service charges, although a few of the funds do receive money from transportation sales tax, namely transit and airport. All right, so railroad, they're looking fairly okay, their cash trends are slowly trending downwards, but not at an alarming rate, and it's looking like they'll be staying above their cash targets for the foreseeable future. With Transload, they just recently started to receive an additional revenue source, which has helped them out, and it's also going to allow us to probably return a lot of their salaries and wages back to this fund. Currently, those salaries and wages are being absorbed by the electric fund. So we're looking at moving about 75% of those wages back to Transload, which should help electric a little bit and put it more where it should be, frankly.
Yeah, so it's self-sustaining.
Yeah.
And just a quick note on this one, we're going to come back to the water. No, not, yes. Yeah, to water. I just say that because the next three slides have a red.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so,
there's a lot of.
We're going to come back to this one. There's probably going to be a lot of questions.
Yeah. Okay, so this is water. Water as it stands. So this is our baseline. So what that means is this is if we have no changes, we just take care of, we keep the rates where they are, and we have to, you know, and our expenses stay at that elevated level that we're projecting them to be at. When we run this scenario, you can see our debt service ratio, which needs to stay above 1.10, I think it is. Yeah. It falls in 2025, and it also our cash above target falls in that year. 26, it continues to fall. And then by 27, we actually go negative cash in this fund. So because of that, we wanted to run a scenario. Now, I just want to emphasize this is a very high-level scenario. We haven't really gotten a chance to get into the weeds and look at how this would tier out. We just wanted to get an idea of what would it take to get this fund back to a more stable level. And what that would require is something like a 3% increase in our revenues on an annual basis. So not just next year, but all out years.
And this is just for the what we have projected here.
Yeah.
So through 2030, this is something that we discussed with council when we did the initial water increase. I believe it was September of 2022, mm-hmm. and we discussed needing to do smaller incremental changes each year in order to keep up and not have to have that huge rate increase in 1 year. We did fall behind with that because we had the bond issuance, and there were some things that former council member Pitzer had tied to this rating increase. And so with us just having those bond issuances happen end of last year, we are now on a timetable where we need to start looking at those smaller incremental increases.
One of the big drags on this fund, as you can see, the debt service line, that's our bond and interest, that's our principal and interest payments for our bond. They go up in 25, they jump up $1 million to start paying down that bond we issued last year for the water treatment plant. One other thing I just want to point out, in 25, even on this scenario, that debt service